Her father was a teacher. He walked in the woods
just like Henry David.
He could live off the land if anyone could.
Geologist Robert Thorson reread Henry David Thoreau's Walden Pond several years ago to prepare co-teaching an American Studies class titled Walden and the American Landscape in the Honors Program. Thor, as he is known around campus, found himself drawn to Thoreau's prose, and he began quite literally to explore the landscape of Walden Woods. Immersing himself in Thoreau's journals, he saw the scientist who recorded observations of the land and its environment. In 2014, Thor published the first book in his reassessment of Thoreau's legacy, titled Walden Shore. Last year, he completed the reassessment with The Boatman. When he discovered there was no guide to one of America's most iconic places, Thor suggested writing a visitor's guide to Walden Pond, which is visited each year by 500,000 people. Working in collaboration with the Walden Woods Project, the organization founded in 1990 by musician Don Henley, he has just published the first guide to Walden Pond. Thor spoke with UConn 360 about the book he admits has an unusual approach. He discusses what he wrote, why Walden Pond is a special place, the return of Thoreau's journal to his writing desk, and what he learned from writing the guide to Walden Pond.
What I really want to do is to carry people into the realm of Walden, which is a challenging text, and to do so piece by piece, stop by stop, and event by event. And I also want to say that Walden Pond is far more than simply Henry David Thoreau. He's the apex for a number of people, especially in the American studies. This is a hybrid guide, and it is a little unusual. A travel guide is exactly what you described. It's like, here's where you should go, this is what you'll see, with a snippet of history or a snippet of some local connection. I think we know that. A Frommer's travel guide, for example, a Michelin guide, whatever. And then there's a trail guide, and I think we know what that looks like. It's like, turn right here, go there, don't fall off that cliff, the lake is to your right. That's a trail guide. And they'll tell you what the conditions might be like and get you ready. And we did that in this book, too. And then there's a nature guide, and this is pretty straightforward. It's look out for the hawks and the chickadees and the hemlocks and the oaks and the pines and the fish and the snails and the vernal pools and so forth. That's a really good nature guide. So we're trying to do all three of those things. But then the last piece is a bit subversive. It's really travel literature. It's a little bit like Bill Bryson's Walk in the Woods, or you could argue even Don Quixote's Man of La Mancha. You know, it's a story of a journey, but there are a series of anecdotal and differentiated essays within it. And the idea is that if you're interested in trails, maybe you'll dig into that a little bit. And if you're interested in nature, you will. And if you're interested in this, you'll go through all of this. So I'm hoping that the more scholarly elements of the guide come through as travel literature. It's a special place because it is clean, because it's beautiful, and because it's in metropolitan Boston, and because it is a state park that should be a national park, an international park, if you like. I think about a quarter of the visitors are internationals visiting it for the first time, and they skip the beach and they march straight to Thoreau's house site and meditate on their own. It's also a special place because Walden is probably the most widely studied, complex, somewhat obtuse literary nonfiction text in American history. You could argue that, but a lot of scholars believe that it is. And it's one that is amazing because every time I read it, I get something new. It is so densely packed. Of course, much of Walden comes from the journal, but the real life work is the journal, which is over 2 million words. And he wrote it sitting at that little green desk, thousands of pages of hand-quilled manuscript. And then, of course, he dies, and his desk goes one place, and his manuscripts go another, and they're separated. And Morgan, or the Morgan Library, owns most of the journal. And the Concord Museum owns his desk. And when they decided on Thoreau's bicentennial celebration to create an exhibit, the idea was, let's bring the journal written on the desk, and the desk used to support the journal back in the same place. And they did. And it was powerful to look at. This is the person's life work is writing, not writing books, but writing the journal, writing to himself, for himself. It's quite a document, and to see those two put together is enough to make you shiver. However, I'm not big on material things. I mean, a book is really just paper, and a desk is really just wood and green paint in this case. But to see them together really made a difference for me. What I learned was that Thoreau is an excellent model for how we should behave relative to several things that seem to be lacking in leadership today. One is living simply. I mean, his key phrase in Walden, the book, is simplicity, simplicity, simplicity. He is a candidate for what we call voluntary simplicity, what we call sustainability, what we call a proper sense of nature, what we call a stand-up for human rights, what we call a literary stylist that is truly amazing. So he has all of these really important things. And of course, they're crammed into a human being or emanate from a human being that is not within his faults. And we've been passed down a rather cranky vision of a misanthrope, a misogynistic misanthrope living in the woods because he can't stand society. That's really, really far from the truth. That says more about us than the reality. It says that we want him to be those things because we're feeling that way, when in fact he was fully engaged with society. The place he built his house was at a triple point. He could go to the railroad and walk it to be with his family. In fact, he was on the railroad so often that they mistook him for an employee. I mean, this is not the man who's hiding in the woods. The other direction went up to Emerson's parlor, where he met with his friends and the other transcendentalists and had absolute good times, you know, discussing the latest theories of the day. And then the third link in that three-trail system was down to the water. And that's where he went down to find the satisfaction and the joy of being alive and to celebrate the simplicity of pure water, a roughly spherical or star-shaped lake, and a world that seemed to make sense from that perspective, and a world that included all kinds of plants and animals and critters.